Is My Unhappiness Normal? From Kishore Chandiramani. Many people ask themselves, is my unhappiness normal? And my guess is, very few can find a satisfactory answer. They seek help when the issues start interfering with their everyday activities, relationships, and well-being in a significant way. However, the answer to this question is important because if it is normal, one should just accept it. And if it is not, one must do something about it. The problem in finding an answer to this question is that one can't get out of one's own mind to objectively assess things. And our conscious mind has a limited capacity to assess the totality of our mind, including our unconscious mind and the unhappiness contained in it. It is also not possible for us to get into somebody else's mind so that we can compare our unhappiness with theirs. One can have a vague idea of the other person's unhappiness by analyzing what is visible, that is, their language, behavior, and moods. Mental health professionals across the globe have struggled to find a satisfactory definition of mental illness. For the same reason, a clarity about what is normal mental health would be equally difficult. The Mental Health Act 1983 in the UK, which was amended in 2007, defines mental illness as any disorder or disability of the mind. It goes on further as relevant professionals should determine whether a patient has a disorder or disability of the mind in accordance with accepted standards of what constitutes such a disorder. This leaves room for a range of professional opinions that can be accepted as correct. The definition of mental health that we come across generally is absence of mental illness. In my opinion, it doesn't take us any further than where we already are in terms of our understanding of mental illness and mental health. If one's negative emotions are strong, but their ability to manage them is also high, one may not see one's suffering as abnormal. In fact, they will not be able to even notice it. On the other hand, if the strength of those painful emotions is low and their capacity to manage them is much lower, one may see the resulting unhappiness as unacceptable and abnormal. There is also an issue here about whether one sees one's unhappiness as ontological, which is inevitable, related to the existential issues such as ultimate separation, loss, and mortality, which has no solutions, or ontic, which can be remedied. And there will be consequences to any confusion or miscalculations here. Seeing one's ontic suffering as ontological, one may not look for solutions to the problems which can be solved. On the other hand, seeing ontological suffering as ontic may result in unnecessary efforts to resolve it and multiplication of one's unhappiness. At times, it's better to experience the pain and suffering and grow rather than stagnate. According to existentialism, we grow because of enrichment of our life experiences. And this enrichment includes both happy and unhappy experiences. When the consciousness expands, it expands in all directions. From this perspective, one can live in a limited subset of their true potential and avoid pain, and thus experience only normal human suffering. One can adapt one's lifestyle in such a way that they avoid situations, people, places, activities that make them anxious, and thereby stay in the fold of the normal human suffering. This normal suffering will not be desirable. As opposed to this, one may venture out into new territories and keep pushing their boundaries and experience a greater pain. This abnormal suffering would be desirable. On occasions, we find that the path to greater joy passes through greater pain. It has been documented in spiritual texts that before a spiritual awakening, one can go through intense psychological pain, described in Christian literature as the dark night of the soul. Vivekananda, Ramana Maharshi, Eckhart Tolle, and Neil Donald Walsh all experienced deep anguish, near-death experiences, and suicidal thoughts before the awakening of their souls happened. I normally recommend understanding mental health in terms of one's finances. Having a mental illness is like you have spent all the money you had and have started borrowing. It's quite normal to borrow money, and almost all of us have done it at some point in our lives. However, it would be abnormal if we are not able to return the money. In a similar fashion, it doesn't matter what symptoms we have experienced in life. It will not be abnormal if we are able to bounce back to our everyday well-being and functioning. Sometimes, people have suffered from long-term psychological problems since their childhood and have difficulty understanding what is normal. It's like somebody who was born with a visual impairment will not know how it feels to see things normally. And if by any luck they undergo a treatment which gives them their vision, they will, for the first time in their life, know what normal vision is. Similarly, children born in dysfunctional families have no idea how it feels to be brought up in a healthy family environment. They accept their experiences and feelings of growing up as normal. Alternatively, some of us may have a very romantic view of life if we are brought up in idyllic settings. All this makes it very difficult to understand what is normal. The psychiatric texts describe the following 7 ways of understanding and defining mental illness and mental health. First, statistical average. Here, the normalcy is understood in terms of the statistical average, assuming that things are normally distributed. Anything within one standard deviation, covering 68% of population, or 2 standard deviation, that is covering 95% of population, would be classed as normal. The problem with this definition is that outliers on the positive side will also be classed as abnormal. An IQ above 120 or 130 would be classed as abnormal. The second problem with this definition is that sometimes a problem affects most people in society, but it's still classed as an illness that needs treatment. An example from the physical illness would be that of cataract. The majority of elderly population will have cataract problem, and it can be seen as normal using a statistical model. But it's also seen as an illness that should be treated with surgery. Otherwise, one will continue to suffer. The second approach to understanding what is abnormal is in terms of the maturity level. What is normal at age 20 may become abnormal at 40 or 60. At the age of 60, a person is expected to be psychologically healthier than they were 20 or 30 years ago. Being socially awkward and shy during adolescent years would be quite normal, but the same behavior would be classed as abnormal in their 30s or 40s. It's okay for a 3-year-old girl to talk to her Barbie doll as if it was a living being, but the same behavior from a 30-year-old woman would be abnormal. In this context, learning disability would be classed as abnormal. Erik Erikson has described 4 stages of maturation and their failure as follows. First, identity versus identity crisis seen in adolescence. Second, intimacy versus isolation seen in young adults. Third, generativity and stagnation seen in midlife. Fourth, integrity versus despair seen in elderly. George Valent has added 2 more categories. First, career consolidation, and second, keepers of the meaning. The third approach to understanding the normalcy would be to look at one's moral and spiritual development, which should take place at the right time, in the absence of which one may be classed as abnormal. With growing up, one must develop love, joy, forgiveness, compassion, faith, gratitude, awe, etc. One may find many of these qualities missing among psychopathic personalities, terrorists, mafia dons, etc., which would be classed as abnormal. Fourth, another dimension that should help us decide normalcy is lack of social and emotional intelligence. These will include the capacity to self-soothe, emotional regulation, understanding others' emotions, interpersonal and social skills, etc. We see these lacking in people who are socially awkward, autistic spectrum disorder, emotionally unstable personality disorder, avoidant personality disorder, etc. Fifth is subjective well-being is another yardstick. The dictum is, if you think you are unwell, you are unwell. Or, no man is happy who doesn't think himself so. The sixth way of understanding normalcy is in terms of mental resilience. It's about one's coping abilities. According to Adolf Meyers, there is no mental illness. There are only characteristic reaction patterns to stress in the form of denial, phobia, paranoia. And these are normal vital phenomena related to healing. The examples given are callus formation or clotting of blood are not illnesses. Similarly, diarrhea and vomiting after food poisoning is not an illness. swelling and redness after injury is not illness, but body's attempts to repair. Along the same lines, anxiety, depression, and psychosis are individuals' struggles to adapt to life. The seventh definition of normalcy would be, in terms of presence of psychological and psychosomatic symptoms that we don't see normally. At times, normal behavior of an individual can be more painful to others than mental illness. I had a patient's relative who said to me, "My sister, who has got an anxiety disorder, is such a darling. I love her to bits and can't live without her. But my brother, who doesn't have any illness, is hard work. We are constantly arguing and we can't live under one roof." We also see retrospective falsification. Some clients understand their problems in terms of coming from a dysfunctional family. And when I ask them to describe their ideas of dysfunctional family, I get a variety of different responses. And at times, the definition of a dysfunctional family may differ from the definitions used by professionals. To conclude, I would say that we all have mental health issues and we all should keep trying to better ourselves the way we try to improve our financial situation, even if we are not in a dire financial situation. Just because one doesn't have a diagnosable mental illness does not mean they don't need to work on their personality. Thank you. This audio was brought to you from the Emotions Clinic Education and Training Center in Stoke-on-Trent, England.